This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, marking Mother's Day weekend by getting to know an energetic 91-year-old mom whose contribution to the war effort 7 decades ago was to entertain the troops overseas. Starting in France and Germany, Joan Patron was an 18-year-old dancing for the USO.
They loved us, and it was a condensed version of a musical on Broadway, Panama Hattie. We had rehearsed it, and we did it, and they loved it. They were very appreciative, and we began to feel that maybe we were doing something helpful and good for the morale.
So until you saw the troops and their response and what it meant to them, you didn't really understand the importance of what you're doing?
Exactly, yes.
And what was your role in the show?
I was a professional dancer. I don't like the term chorus girl. I was a dancer in it. And, you know, sometimes you get special little things to do, special that are outside of just the chorus, you know. It was, we were being paid. I was sending my money home to my mother, who needed it for the younger kids left, my grandmother. That was where I was really doing some good, was sending money home to my mother. That was a perk. I loved the fact that I was getting 3 meals a day. I said, wow, this is terrific. I'm going to get so healthy and, you know. It wasn't hard work. And we weren't allowed to date lieutenants and above. We were only allowed to date the enlisted men. When I was coming back from Japan, a lieutenant came up to me. I hadn't even met him. I don't even remember his name, except that he was very handsome. He looked like Gregory Peck. And when he saw us leaving, he came up to me and said, will you marry me? I thought, oh my God, I don't even know him. What? That was scary. It was scary. It was so, you know, I knew nothing. And I said, oh no, I'm only 18. I'm not thinking about marriage right now. I didn't want to insult him and say, you know, what, are you crazy or something? But that happened.
You mentioned those first things you saw, and even the smell of dead, decaying bodies, and how assaulting that was to your senses. What else did you see and experience there, and how did that add to your understanding of what was really happening and what these young men were going through?
Well, you may not believe this, but I didn't know. I didn't even know that Hitler was killing the Jews. I didn't know that he wanted to conquer the world. I didn't know that he was a satanic soul, that he was a victim of his hate. He was a monster. But I didn't know all of that. I just knew Germany was in war and they lost the war. That was it. And here's the result. And it's pretty awful. It's horrific. But when I went on that boat, merrily, 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 life is but a dream, you know, row, row, row your boat. It was a transport that took me there. It wasn't merrily, 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 life is but a dream there. It was a nightmare. So I had rowed myself into into a nightmare. Yeah.
At 18 years old.
Yeah. So I was, as I told you, I was part shock absorber, part curious cat, and just going through the minefields of life. You know, I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen next with my life, except that I went to Japan. I said, okay. Yeah. Okay, I'm going there too.
You're 18. A lot of these soldiers are 18, 19, 20 years old. Did you form an impression of them?
I knew that they were soldiers. I had no idea what it's like to be a soldier in combat until I saw films, fantastic films that were made about what war was really like. Those images never entered my mind, that these men were putting their lives and their guts, their soul into, that they had to face death maybe any day. I never thought about that. I just thought, oh, it's an audience. You're here to entertain. Just do your job. Be a good girl. You're here to witness. I really did feel consciously like a witness, that I was witnessing all of this, that I wasn't really, I was a part of it. Whatever part it was to entertain, that was my job. But I never went into the depth of the evil force that was hovering over people at this time in history. There was an evil force worse coming up, which was the atomic bomb. And I didn't know about that either. You know, nobody knew about that one.
Truman didn't even know until FDR died. So you go throughout France and Germany performing for all these troops. The war has just ended. They're relieved. They're happy to see you. And then they ask you if you want to go to Japan too?
Yeah, I was eager to find out what that was like. And I found myself in an airplane this time, not a boat. I remembered this much of the airplane inside. It was a bucket seat. It's like a swing when you're a kid and it's, you know, you're buckled in and so you sit there. And then I said, well, I'm on my way to Japan. And then we landed. We were on our way on a train to a station. Oh, this was a variety show. This was different. I was jitterbugging with another dancer. So I did other things. I can't remember. We danced and skits and stuff. So I got off the train with some other dancers. All together, there were about four of us. And the first thing I saw was a skeleton of a big building with nothing, no walls. It was transparent, just the iron structure. That was shocking to me because it wasn't a normal look. You know, it wasn't. There was no building. I said, oh, my God, just evaporate. It just vaporized the inside of everything. And that to me was horrible. And I thought, my God, I'm sure other things happened that were worse than that. So we walked a little way, take some fresh air and walk around. And the only thing for acres of land, the only thing that we came upon was a tiny little white rubble, almost like a dome with a bell. This is the first time that I protested, you know, making my statement about a policy or about war. It was the first time that I objected, and it was my own country that I was. I said, this is terrible. We shouldn't be using atomic bombs on people. I knew that Hiroshima had been bombed. So I found myself looking at this rubble, and there was the bell, and there was a long rope that came down through on top of the rubble, down right to my feet. It almost became a live thing, because how could I resist taking the rope? I bent down. I was not thinking anymore. I was just feeling. It was emotional. My anger. I took that rope and I just blang, 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 just made as much noise as I possibly could with that. And I thought, oh, people are hearing this. They know what this is. It's a protest. Wherever they are, they must be in the woods over there and houses and things. They must hear this. And that was the first time I thought, later, many years later, I said, your voice, you were expressing, you had a voice with the bell.
The protest was in response to the unbelievable loss of life that the atomic bomb had brought to Hiroshima.
Oh, I could only imagine what it must have been. I knew that the fact that things disappeared, I didn't even know that it was fire and burning and a toxic rain and a burning of skin. I didn't even think of that. I just saw what happened to the building, and I thought, oh, my God, what about the people? They disappeared with it. Just a skeleton of a building. I thought, okay, so now it gets worse. Before it was rubble, now it's making cities invisible, total destruction.
You know, we've heard on this program from quite a few veterans of World War II who were slated to invade Japan and were on their way to do so. And their feeling is, you know, those atomic bombs saved my life. My life was spared because they dropped that bomb. And I don't hear you arguing with that, but you're saying there were still lives lost, and that's tragic.
Right. There's the other side of the coin where innocent people were killed. Children, babies, their skin falling off their bodies while they're trying to get help, and there isn't any help there. It's pretty horrific. I mean, look, the only thing that I learned in my 91 years is that I wish that as a child I had been taught that there is such a thing as an evil force. It exists. It's there. And it can get into the human soul if you let it, like Hitler did. He allowed the satanic hate to take him over. It was overwhelming, and it overwhelmed him. It took his life, too. His hate took his life, too. The hate said, oh, you're next. You have to commit suicide now, and you're in a rat hole, and you're done. You're finished. We're finished with you. There is a hate force, and there is also a good force. There's evil and good in this world. It is. It exists. It's reality. So when you are experiencing this along the way, if you don't learn that there is evil and good, I didn't hear the word evil at all ever in my childhood, anywhere. People said, oh, that's bad, that's wrong. But I never heard the word evil until I was a mature adult. And even then, I hardly heard it, even in church. So then I was also trying to find out what was going to hold me together. And the thing that held me together is Sermon on the Mount.
What was it about that spoke to you, that helped you deal? Because it sounds like that was traumatic for you to see this devastation in Hiroshima.
I never expected the world to be like that.
You said that that the Sermon on the Mount held you together.
Yes.
Was there something specifically that you read or heard there that applied to the situation you found yourself in, or maybe the uncertainty you were feeling?
Yes. The only thing that worked for me was that the truth is my best friend. Christ said, the truth will set you free. And also, be as a child again. I thought he was saying, be as a child again, meaning be innocent again. He also said, live in this world, but be not of this world. And I was washing dishes one day, and I thought of that. And I thought, live in this world, but be not of this world, came to my mind. And I said, how that? I actually thought I could ask him. I said, how am I supposed to do that? Well, the answer didn't come right away, but it did come. And I heard this message, detach from evil.
And I guess the other thing that comes to mind, and I don't want to leave anything out as far as World War II, but you said that at the time, and again, you're a teenager, I mean, how much do you understand as a teenager, that you were out there for an adventure? Has that perspective changed over the years? Because I think even though we still have entertainers who go and entertain the troops around the world, it just seems to me that during this era, it was the brightest stars. If they weren't in the service themselves, and many of them were. I mean, guys like Clark Gable were wearing Army Air Corps uniforms. Mm. But Bob Hope and Jack Benny and Fred Astaire, they're all entertaining the troops.
Yes, I felt a little kind of attachment or part of that, too. I thought, oh, I did that, too, you know, but I didn't think of myself as doing something great. The only time that I felt that I was doing something right and good was ringing the bell in protest. That was my contribution. A little teeny weeny little sound, you know, like Horton hears a who. I mean, if you're up in the universe and you're on the moon, you know, certainly not going to, I'm invisible if you're on the moon and you don't hear it. It was a little teeny-weeny sound in the universe, a little beep, you know, saying, no, this is wrong. War is hell. It's evil. It's bad. It's no good. We're not supposed to be doing this.
Now, I want to hear a little more about your career in show business, because we could be here all day talking about that, I'm sure. But on the war, I talked to veterans who have experienced post-traumatic stress, yes, and still do 70 years after World War II. Yes. And I understand that's something that you dealt with because of what you saw in Japan.
I think so. I think that I didn't see evil a little at a time. I saw it all at once, and my brain wouldn't wrap around it. It just kept saying, what does this mean to you? What is your future like? What are you going to do? I think that I probably felt isolated, but I also realize that I didn't have a stable frame of reference as far as nutrition was concerned. And so I think I was malnourished also, besides being shocked and so forth. So I was, you know, defeated by a lot of things that I didn't know why. When you start having hallucinations or you can't cope and you can't function, that's a sign that something's wrong. What happened was that I had what is known as, they call it a nervous breakdown. The solution was you have to go to a mental institution. And I find, here I am, and you know, in a mental institution with bars. But anyway, they gave me 10 shock treatments, and it was horrible. I mean, this was, what are you doing to me? Why? What have I done?
Is it true that you're the one who brought this to Jack Nicholson's attention, and that's why he's starting that movie?
Yeah, that's a riot. I was working for Marlon Brando as an assistant, one of his assistants. Jack Nicholson was living just down the block on this hill. We call it a block. It was a path down to his residence, and I never met him. But he had an assistant, and I went to her one day, and I said, I didn't show her the book. I said, I have a book. It's called One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It's got an Academy Award-winning role in here for Jack. And I said, I'd like to meet him and give him this. And she said, no, you know, it's like sandbox politics, right? You know, you really would like to see this done. It's personal. Another ringing the bell. So I said, just why don't we do this? You tell me, how do you get a screenplay produced? And I knew you had to go to a producer, but I pretended that, you know, I'll exchange it so I wouldn't have to belly up to her. You know, we'll exchange, you know. So I said, here's the book. Well, my God, 2 years later, 2 years, I was sitting watching the Academy Awards, and Jack Nicholson is waving this Oscar. And I thought, that's not possible. I never even met him. What's going on? I never heard, hey, it's going to be done. You know, I did, at the last minute, I did hear a little bit. I told a friend he got into the movie. I told a friend that it was going. So I met her in a shop one day, and I said, hey, I never asked you, what did you think of my predicting that there was a role in there, actors, an Academy Award role for Jack Nicholson? She said, oh, well, you were psychic. I said, oh.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It's break time again, but you heard Joan mention another famous name in there, Marlon Brando, with whom she would act in the 1961 Western he directed, One-Eyed Jacks. We'll explore their friendship when we come back and also hear from Joan's daughter. A special Mother's Day edition of Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.